The IPCC report on mitigation. Our speakers today are the chairman of the IPCC, Rajendra Pachauri. We have the two co-chairs of Working Group 3, Ogunlade Davidson and Bert Metz. We also have around 15 lead authors with us today here in the room. I'll start off by asking Dr. Pachauri to take the floor.
Thank you very much, and thank you for waiting patiently. We're delighted to have you all over here on an occasion which we think is extremely important for dealing with the problem of climate change, and also because this marks the third of a series of working group reports that the IPCC has brought out. We still have the synthesis report, which would be coming out in November, and that particular report would be based on an integration and synthesis of the essential material that's contained in the three working group reports. Let me give you a one-phrase description of this report. I would say it's stunning in its brilliance, and it's razor sharp in its relevance. It's really a remarkable step forward from the knowledge that was contained in the third assessment report, which of course was an excellent report. And there are several respects in which we have gone really far. Let me also give you the context in which the relevance of this report would be established and would work over the coming months and years. We have the 13th Conference of the Parties under the Framework Convention on Climate Change taking place in Bali in December this year. And clearly, the science that the IPCC has been able to assess will have a direct impact, and we hope a profound influence on the discussions that take place and the direction towards an agreement in the 13th Conference of the Parties. We must view this against the background, as this report has brought out, that between 1970 and 2004, the growth in greenhouse gas emissions has been about 70%. So the world is obviously on a warming path, which the first and second working group reports also brought out, and particularly the impacts of climate change, which the Working Group 2 report brought out. I will not get into major details, because those will be provided by the co-chairs of Working Group 3. But let me just highlight a few things that should be of some interest to you and, of course, to the global community at large. This time around, we have assessed the stabilization of multi-gas scenarios and scenarios dealing with the stabilization of a range of gases that are relevant, not just carbon dioxide. This report has emphasized the importance of sustainable development and the nexus between mitigation measures. Of course, adaptation measures were covered in the Working Group 2 report, and sustainable development. It's of great satisfaction that this report, for the first time, has dealt with lifestyles and consumption patterns as an important means by which we can bring about mitigation of greenhouse gas emissions. So, of course, you can look at technology, you can look at policies, but what is an extremely powerful message in this report is the need for human society as a whole to start looking at changes in lifestyles and consumption patterns. It's also, for the first time, carried out an assessment of nuclear energy. This has not been done by the IPCC in the past. It has worked very closely, this working group has worked very closely with civil society, with industry, and all stakeholders, because we necessarily have to derive experience and knowledge from these sections of society who have knowledge, for instance, in the case of industry, on a whole range of technologies, in the case of civil society, on issues that I've just mentioned in terms of influencing the behavior of the public, the behavior of the consumer. We've also carefully looked at the price of carbon and how this could influence a whole lot of developments, including the development of technology. It's probably naive to believe that merely developing technologies in labs and in workshops would be the answer, unless there's a package of policies, unless there are market forces, which in this case are represented by the price attached to carbon. You're not likely to get a major dissemination of technologies, no matter how meritorious and desirable they would be. So I will not say any more, but I want to end by saying that the three working group reports, the first one dealt with the physical science basis of climate change, and it gave you an assessment of how the climate of the world had been changing, the manner in which we've seen changes in precipitation, the melting of the glaciers, sea level rise, and then Working Group 2 has carefully assessed the impacts, adaptation opportunities, and the vulnerability of different parts of the world. And now we have a set of solutions which have been carefully evaluated and assessed in the Working Group 3 reports. How do we bring about a reduction and a stabilization of emissions of greenhouse gases? And this has been provided in the framework of technologies, policies, institutional and societal responses, all of which have been presented in this report for your consideration. And I'll end by saying that this rich material that we have in the three working group reports will now be used in the preparation, and we are well on our way to the preparation of the synthesis report, which will be ready in November of this year. So this is all I have to say by way of introduction, and you'll get all the meat and all the interesting stuff from my colleagues, the co-chairs of Working Group 3.
Okay, we'll now pass over to the co-chairs, Bert Metz and Ogunlade Davidson.
Thank you, Chair of IPCC. Let me, on behalf of Working Group 3, extend gratitude and welcome to all of you here to formally give you some ideas of this report. Before I start, I like to tell you that we are trying to summarize a report that is over, that's over 1,000 pages. And we'll try as best as possible to give you enough information so that it will cover the interest and reflect your concerns. However, after our presentation, we will be very much available to answer questions. So in short, if I should describe this report, I'll describe it in one sentence. This report is all about solutions to the climate change problem. That it is the, by NGOs, by industry. Now, in preparing this report, we involve quite a lot of people. To be exact, almost 170 authors, to be exact, 168 authors were involved in preparing this report. These authors cover a wide range of people all over the world. In fact, to be exact again, 55 of these 168 authors, which is roughly around 40%, are from developing countries, and about 100 from developed countries. In addition to these authors, each of the chapters got significant support from contributing authors who provided expert opinion and expert information to suit the particular aspects of the report that we need to get so that we can give the best form of report for you people to know about climate change mitigation. And also in addition, the report has gone through significant number of reviewers. Two main sets of reviewers. One is the expert reviewers, and these are experts all over the world of the region of about 485. And also it has gone through two government reviews. So this gives us a clear idea of the scope of people that you are involved in preparing this report. Now, this report, as you would see later on, has one aspect which was also highlighted by the chair, covering various sectors. But before we can look at the report proper, it is nice and important that we look at what has been happening in terms of the global greenhouse gases emissions to the atmosphere. It has been rising. And to take as an example in the view graph you see in front of you, it has risen by over 70% between 1970 and 2004, in which we claim or we have reliable data for. So this clearly shows that if we look at all the gases together, it has risen by about 70%, and of course that is worrying. Now if we take a more microscopic view of what I've just shown you, the two most important gases, or the most important gases to the total greenhouse gas emissions, is carbon dioxide. And if you look at the view graph on the bottom, you can see the carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuel use, significantly from the power sector. You can see the graph, it is explanatory there for all of us to see, and the top part of the graph can show you that of CO2 decay and, of course, from deforestation. But you can clearly tell you the importance of carbon dioxide in this whole picture. Now, what is the report saying about the future? Because that is of the greatest importance to all of us. I've briefly mentioned what has passed. But two main important things are in the view graph for us to see. And that is, if we continue to do what we are doing now, we are in deep trouble. Now, as it's clearly stated there, with current climate change mitigation policies and related sustainable development practices, global GHG emissions will continue to grow over the next few decades. That is a major message for us to take home. The next one is the IPCC stress scenarios. These are baseline scenarios. These are scenarios that were developed within IPCC without explicit climate policies. Clearly shows that by the year 2030, the GHG emissions will increase between 25% to 90% relative to 2000 base levels. So this caused some thinking within the authors of this report to now look more deeply into the report. And for that, to look more deeply into the report, I'll hand you over to my colleague, Bart Smith, to continue. I'll come in back later.
Against this background of rising emissions, the task of the authors was to find out what the potential is to reduce these emissions. And the key findings, and I will illustrate that with a few numbers, is that there is substantial economic potential for the mitigation. What we mean with mitigation is reduction of these emissions over the coming decades. And that potential is such that we could offset the projected growth, and in some scenarios could even reduce emissions below current levels. So that is sort of the bottom line of the assessment that this projected growth can be compensated based on the economic potential of all the measures available. Now, in the table below, the authors have divided that up in different cost categories. There's so much you can do at low cost, and when your costs go higher, you can do more. That's a fairly logical thing. The first row where you see a carbon price of zero, which basically means things that even without a price of carbon would make sense, i.e. would create benefits, is already a substantial number, 5 to 7 gigatons, which cuts you somewhere between 7 and 14% below what otherwise would have happened. And when you go up in cost levels, and their analysis was extended to the $100 per ton, you get much higher numbers, of course. Next, please. One back. Another important message is this was the global picture. Now the report contains a lot of more detailed information. There were chapters for each of the major economic sectors that you see listed here, and the conclusion is that all sectors can contribute to that economic potential. And in this graph, you get an indication of the relative contribution that each of these sectors could make, again divided in three columns, three bars, for the different cost categories, but now also indicating in what part of the world that potential can be found. And as you can see, all parts of the world, the OECD countries, the countries with economies in transition, and developed and non-OECD countries do have that potential to contribute to the mitigation. Can I go to the next, please? Of course, what in practice this means that specific measures have to be taken, and in most cases these are technological things. You do things that create such reductions, and the report has an exhaustive analysis of what are these key technologies that are available today, which you can get on the market. And this is just a brief and short selection to give you any flavor. It's in the energy sector, it's about efficiency, switching to other fuels, which could be nuclear renewables, like hydropower, solar, wind, bioenergy, combined heat and power, but also CO2 capture and storage, at least on those installations where that, given the cost, makes sense today. In the transport sector, there's a lot to be gained from more efficient vehicles, both regular and hybrid. Biofuels is one technology, but also shifts from road transport to rail and public transport, cycling, walking, and designing the cities in such a way that you minimize the need for motorized transport. The building sector is one that really shows the highest potential for low-cost action by quite a range of technologies such as efficient lighting, efficient appliances in the home, air conditioning systems, insulation, solar heating and cooling, and also because this is not only about CO2, it's also about other greenhouse gases, the so-called fluorinated gases that are in refrigerators. And there are more climate-friendly alternatives available. Next. And I go briefly through the other sectors. In industry, it's about efficient electrical equipment, combined heat and power to make more efficient use of the available energy, recycling, and also control of a number of non-CO2 gases in industrial installations. agriculture and forest are other sectors where, although it's slightly different from the previous, a lot can be achieved by managing the soils to retain the carbon, to restore degraded lands, to improve rice cultivation that helps to minimize the emissions of methane and other things. And in the forest sector, the main thing is the reduced deforestation, which is a major contributor to current emissions, and if that can be reduced, we can achieve major gains. And in the waste sector, there are many practices like landfill methane recovery, waste incineration, composting, recycling, and waste minimization that do contribute to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Next, please. But we should not forget about the non-technical issues. That's another message from the report. There are quite a number of lifestyle and behavioral changes that can contribute to climate change mitigation. That is something the report has not been able to quantify, so it's a more qualitative message, but that's clearly coming from the sector analysis. Next. Now, the next question, of course, is what does that cost for the economy as a whole? If we undertake all these efforts, what will we suffer? Will the economy suffer? And there is a broad analysis of what it would mean for the economy, but again, for different levels of ambition. And that is expressed here in stabilization level. I will not bother you with the details, but the highest one is the least ambitious policy, and the lowest level is the most ambitious that has been analyzed. And in 2030, because these numbers are for the next 25 years, that means that we're talking about a reduction of the GDP, of the national income, if you would like to use that word, compared to what it otherwise would have been in the most ambitious case of 3%. And that's against the background of a rising income level over the 25 years. We've also expressed that in how does it affect the annual average growth rate, because many people are used to that metric, used to that way of expressing economic growth. So if you have an economic growth of 3%, 4%, 5% per year, this means that if you do undertake the most ambitious measures, you talk about a reduction of that 3%, 4%, 5% with 0.12 percentage point. So to put things in perspective. Now these are analyses from models, so you have to be cautious. These are making assumptions about a very efficient approach to this, and if that is not done, costs could, of course, be higher. Next. There are other benefits, which we normally in this report call co-benefits of mitigation. And one very good example is that health benefits from reduced air pollution as a result of reduced GHG reduction can offset a substantial fraction of the cost. And an example is that if you shift from coal to gas, for instance, you could achieve a lower level of air pollution. That lower air pollution gives fewer health effects, and that is a significant, if you quantify that in monetary terms, is a substantial gain you get. And so it is important to look at the climate change mitigation in the broader context. And there are other benefits, such as improved energy security, by making yourself less vulnerable to supply of energy sources from abroad, balance of trade improvement and employment, and also provision of energy services to rural areas. There is also something we have to be careful about. As long as the mitigation action is only taking place in a few countries, then developments elsewhere could in fact reduce some of the effects, and we call that so-called carbon leakage. So there are connections between actions of different countries. Next. Another part of the report is devoted to the long term. This is a problem that will not be playing out in only over the next 25 years. It's a long-term problem, and controlling this will take 50 to 100 years. But that means that since gases that go up in the atmosphere will not will stay there, that we have to make sure that emissions are going down. It's like your bathtub. If you have the faucet open, then the bath will overflow at some point. So in order to prevent that, you have to close the tap. That is the idea of stabilization. It means that, and the analysis in this report says that the lower you want to keep the level of gases in the atmosphere, the earlier you have to reduce emissions. And we go one step further to say that in the next two or three decades, the reductions through mitigation action will have a large impact on what we in the longer term can achieve. So there is a clear connection to what we can achieve in the long term and what we do in the next 25 years. Next. There's a lot of analysis of what that means in terms of when these emissions have to go down. I won't go into too much detail for you, but if you look at the so-called A1 category, that is the category that is this most stringent action that keeps the level of gases in the atmosphere the lowest of all of the studies analyzed. That means that for that scenario to be realized, global emissions need to peak not later than 2015. And by 2050, they need to be somewhere between 50 to 80% below current levels. So that means there is an enormous effort would be required to achieve that. Of course, if the levels you allow in the atmosphere are getting higher and you go down in the table, the time you have to turn around the growing emissions into a decline will be longer, and the reduction required by 2050 will be less. Next, what we also did in the report is connect those levels of gases in the atmosphere, the so-called concentration levels, into what it means for the global mean temperature in the very long term when the atmosphere and the Earth system has stabilized. And we show, and that's based to a large extent on the Working Group 1 report that was already approved and released in January, that the higher the concentrations become, the higher the global mean average temperature will be. So we present a clear relationship for people to understand what these levels of greenhouse gases could mean for temperatures, and connect that also with the impacts of these changed climates on various sectors. Yes, next. Then I'll turn it over to Ogunlade Davidson for this part.
Thank you, Bart. Bart has given us both technical and non-technical measures to try to reduce greenhouse gases. But what the report further tries to do is to look at policies and different types of instruments that are open to us to realize that we can reduce climate change. These policies that we are giving are very wide, as you would see, and of course in applying them it's due to national circumstances and national conditions within different countries, because it varies from country to country. But the report also tries to use some broad criteria that we can help countries to choose. And these criteria are the environmental effectiveness, the distributional effect, including equity, because that is very, very important for most countries of the world, that the difference between the rich and the poor. We do not want to reduce greenhouse gases and then we make the situation in the society even worse than it is today. And of course, institutional feasibility. As you would see, that the previous graph, we listed quite a lot of policies that governments can take. And these policies that could create incentives for both producers and consumers to significantly invest in low GHG products. And these policies include, or may include, or for them to really become effective, different types of economic instruments, and also government funding, and different types of standards and regulations for them to operate. Now, for me to go on further, it would be interesting to realize that these policies do influence both technical and non-technical options, both technical and non-technical measures, because it is, as was said in the previous presentation by my colleague, it's not only technical ways exist to reduce greenhouse gases. And we definitely need to look at these types of policies. Even if we start with the different types of technologies to stimulate their development, their deployment in various parts of the world under the umbrella of transfer of technologies from people who have the technologies and those who need those technologies, there are several aspects in terms of policies that governments can consider, starting from the financial aspects in terms of tax credits, in terms of using regulations, in terms of creating markets and try to make the markets as efficient as possible, and then, as usual, the normal situation in technology development. Now, however, to transfer technology involves one important point, because we should not forget also receiving technology is nice, but receiving technology implies that the countries that need this technology have the receptive capacity to absorb the technology. And for you to absorb the technology, you definitely have to have the local enabling conditions that are suitable to absorb the technology. So that is extremely important. The other aspect is the financing situation. You have to have the financing capacity to absorb technology, and this at times can create barriers for countries to absorb technology. Now let me just briefly mention one thing, that some of the policies that we discuss, some can look at the future for certain countries, some of these policies can apply them almost immediately. And they vary from sector to sector. Some policies are good for the energy supply sector, some are better for the transport sector, some for the building sector, because it's not all the same policies for the same different sectors, but we can discuss that during the discussion. Now, there's a very strong element of this report that we should not forget. And we started discussing it in the third assessment report, but we went quite further with this thought and concept in the fourth assessment report. And that is the relationship between sustainable development and climate change mitigation. It is extremely important to note that really, if we alter the way we develop our societies, if we alter the way we behave in our societies, especially within the economic, the environmental, and technical regimes, we definitely can also effectively reduce greenhouse gases. This is a very, very important point, which we can see in the view graph, which is summarized as follows: making development more sustainable and changing the future paths of development can make major contributions to climate change mitigation. This is something the report has found out. This is something the report believes in. However, we should not think it is the easiest thing to do. Mainstreaming development into the climate change regime or vice versa is not easy because there are multiple barriers, and these barriers fall into either technical, economic, social, institutional, different types of barriers that need to be removed. And if we look at the whole policy regime, there are also policies that can assist us to lessen these barriers, which is also discussed in the report. We also realize that despite there are synergies between sustainable development and climate change mitigation, there are also trade-offs between them, but there are also conflicts can arise between climate change and climate change mitigation and sustainable development. And we also fully analyze in the report how we can avoid those conflicts so that we ensure that the climate change mitigation, which is our main focus, is achieved. So in short, the report clearly identifies positive solutions to address climate change mitigation. We also do not forget that significant number of nations of the world have to develop. We do not say it should stop to develop and only emphasize climate change mitigation. We provide room for countries that have to develop to use certain measures to avoid the amount of GHG emissions they put in the atmosphere. We further provide for developed countries to take their necessary obligations in trying to contribute towards climate change mitigation. With that, this is in gist, trying to put more than 1,000 pages in just a few minutes. Thank you.
Oh, of course.